ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
But first, it's been a torrid week for the BBC, my former employer, with the UK's public broadcaster convulsed by yet another major scandal, which led to the resignation of two senior executives, its head of news, Deborah Turness, and its director general, Tim Davey. It followed accusations of serious and systemic bias in news coverage, which included, among other things, the misleading editing by its flagship current affairs show Panorama of a speech by Donald Trump ahead of the storming of the US Capitol on January the 6th, 2021.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and I'll be there with you, and we fight. We fight like hell. And if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore.
What the program had done there was to splice together two parts of the speech, delivered more than 50 minutes apart. The BBC has formally apologized to the president, but said it will not pay him compensation. Donald Trump is still threatening to take legal action in a billion-dollar lawsuit. Let's talk to Roger Mosey, a former BBC executive who was the head of BBC Television News, BBC Sport, the BBC's coverage of the London Olympics. He's had a storied BBC career. And full disclosure, he was also for many years my boss. Roger, thanks for joining us on Saturday Extra.
It's a pleasure. And I should say, Nick, that when I went to Sydney a few years ago, one of the things I did as former director of London 2012 was go and look at the Olympic Stadium. So plenty of connections here, OK?
And London learned a lot, didn't they, from the 2000 Games in Sydney. And a lot of Sydney-siders who have been part of that Games ended up joining the London Olympic Committee as well. Let's talk about that edit, that edited clip from an incendiary speech on January the 6th. I mean, it struck me as a serious editorial failing. What did you think, Roger?
Exactly that. I mean, there's no need to do it. I mean, you can look at what Donald Trump did on the 6th of January 2021 and report that fairly without needing to splice together two different bits of the speech. And it did unquestionably change the meaning of it. It wasn't just a sort of elision. It was actually different meaning. And it was a terrible mistake by the BBC.
Yeah, I bring a certain amount of lived experience to this discussion. I covered Donald Trump for years for the BBC. I promise you, we agonized over every potentially contentious word and every potentially contentious edit, often, you know, minutes, seconds before we would go to air. Panorama is a flagship show. Its programs are often months in the making. It's not as if the deadline was just minutes away. Do we know what went wrong here, how the editorial process failed?
I don't think we do. And for the BBC, it's really a question of, was it a conspiracy, which some people think it was, or was it a cock-up, which is what I think it is? But there is probably some sort of either bias or unconscious bias going on there in a way it deals with Donald Trump. So I think there are multiple issues lurking there, but the BBC hasn't really explained it. And of course, the problem, as usual, is not necessarily just the edit, which was a big enough problem. It was when the BBC knew about it, which it did in February this year and again in May this year, it didn't actually do anything about it. And the senior executives, I think, fell from their jobs mainly because they'd known about this, it had been raised, and they didn't disclose that to the public.
Now, Roger, this controversy has got a lot of attention here in Australia, but it is worth just going over some of the background. This followed the leak of a memo prepared by an ex-journalist, Michael Prescott, who used to work for the Sunday Times in London. He was also an independent advisor to the BBC's Editorial Guidelines and Standards Board. His memo also raised concerns, not just about the coverage of Donald Trump, but transgender issues, the war in Gaza. It spoke of a serious and systemic bias in news coverage. It's a long memo. How damning, in your view, was it?
I think Michael Prescott is right about some things and wrong about others. I mean, I think overall, the Panorama, which is the centre of this allegation, was a fair programme. It had a bad edit in an otherwise fair programme. I think on other things, there are issues that the BBC should address and talk about. I mean, the most obvious one is BBC Arabic, the BBC service in Arabic, which I think most people, the BBC executives I talk to, think has been a problem, that BBC Arabic has at times lent a bit too far in one direction within the Middle East conflict, and that is a problem, which I know they're addressing, but they did need to address it. And of course, on transgender rights, this is something affecting broadcasters worldwide, I guess, which how 3 or 4 years ago, the battle about transgender rights rights was represented on air. The BBC signed up to the UK organisation Stonewall, which is pro-gay rights and pro-trans rights. And that probably in itself was a bit of a breach of impartiality, because not everyone agrees with Stonewall, but the BBC signed up to that.
This week you wrote a piece in The Guardian, and you said this: my own judgment is that the BBC has historically avoided a party political bias, but it has a well-meaning liberalism. Unpack that phrase for us a little. What do you mean by a well-meaning liberalism?
The BBC wants society to improve and get better, and it wants to represent all the people of the United Kingdom and in its global enterprises as well. So I think the BBC has got a sort of benign, a slightly paternalistic liberal drive behind it, which doesn't really reflect necessarily the countries we're all becoming now. And in Britain, as you know, the surge of Nigel Farage and the Reform Party has been really quite striking. Obviously, in America, Donald Trump. And it's not just movements of the right. Also, you've got the Green Party in Britain now becoming much more populist. And the BBC doesn't really kind of compute that too much. And I think at times this has left behind people in the coastal communities of Britain, older people maybe, and hasn't really assimilated itself to the way political views are changing.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, isn't it? And I know you've been critical in the past that the BBC did not see Brexit coming. It just kind of missed that major story of the last sort of 10 years or so. It's staffed by a lot of people who live in urban metropolitan settings. They are predominantly university educated. Is that one of the BBC's institutional failings, that it's not representative of the country it tries to cover?
I think that's right. Now, I did hear on the grapevine, Nick, that you had picked up something I said, that the BBC had never understood Donald Trump, for instance. And I think, in fairness, I think you did understand Donald Trump. But there is a bit of a tendency for liberal media organisations in many countries to regard Make America Great Again or Reform in Britain or other movements around the world as being strange anthropological specimens. So you're used to the people in London or Sydney. But when you go outside those liberal metropolitan centres and find a different kind of country, journalists somehow don't really get those people. And I've lived in America quite a bit. And, you know, I get New York and San Francisco. Do I get Kansas and Louisiana? Probably not. And that, of course, is where some of the strength of the Make America Great movement again came from. And journalists have to be really, really good to see what's happening and to report it fairly and accurately.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons we did see Trump coming in 2016, or certainly understood what was happening in terms of his support, was we just kind of camped out in the Rust Belt. We spent a lot of time in these communities where those empty factories and those derelict steel mills became the echo chambers for Make America Great Again. You know, when he said the American dream is dead, it was those people who believed him. I mean, do BBC reporters just need to get out more? I mean, I know the BBC over the last few years has really tried to sort of disperse its staff. It's putting people in Manchester and putting parts of its news organisation in different parts of the country. I mean, presumably, you know, that is a welcome development.
Yes, but you need to listen to the people there. So I wrote a book in about 2019, 2020 about Brexit, partly. And the people working in BBC local radio in counties like Lincolnshire or Northamptonshire knew what was happening there. They could, every time they opened the lines on a phone in, everybody said they wanted to leave. And that didn't really get back to London. So people who were metropolitan editors thought, well, Remain's going to win this and Britain will stay in the EU forever. And they weren't listening to what their own local radio stations were telling them. And it's a very different perspective on life if you're, you know, the big cities of the world, from New York to Sydney with London and everywhere in between, that they are different from the rest of their countries. And you've got to listen to them. And I think sometimes people felt patronised and people felt that they were being told off almost by public service broadcasting.
You mentioned your book. You published it in 2022. It was called 20 Things That Would Make the News Better. I mean, alas, we haven't got time to go into all 20 of those things. But I mean, Roger, are there some key ideas in that book which resonate in this particular moment?
Well, look, the BBC has got to be better. And I think the one thing, I love the BBC, and I absolutely think it's one of the world's great broadcasters. But I think sometimes it could be complacent. It makes mistakes, and sometimes they're humdingers of mistakes. And you can't then say, well, we're actually rather marvellous and we want to do the right things. You have to be accountable. You have to make sure your staff are highly competent. I mean, someone somewhere on Panorama thought that was a good thing to do and make that edit, and it was a very bad thing to do. So you have to make sure, if you really are pushing yourself in this way, that you're as good as you claim to be, and good intentions are no absolute guarantee of your future funding.
I love the BBC as well. On this programme, we get a lot of BBC journalists on because I think they're the best in the world. When I want to talk about the Middle East, I want to talk with Jeremy Bowen. When I want to talk about Iran and Afghanistan, I want to talk about Lisa Sett. Russia, I want to talk to Steve Rosenberg. These are journalistic figures who are well known in Australia for good reason. There is a brilliance. But, you know, this is yet another BBC scandal. We've had Jimmy Savile. We've had the coverage of the lead up to the Iraq war. We had the Crown Gate affair when footage of the Queen was misleadingly edited. On the richer scale of BBC scandal, Roger, I mean, how serious a quake is this and how does the organisation come back from it?
I think the Panorama edit is one of the actually slightly lesser scandals, really. I mean, it was an edit done in a suite late at night. But the consequences, I think, are worse than the other ones because they've lost the Director General. They've lost the Director of News. There's no obvious succession strategy. And I think the board, the whole BBC board, has had a bad week. Now, there are various conspiracy theories going around about this is all a right-wing coup. I don't believe those. I think this is actually, any non-executive director would have been very alarmed at what Panorama did. And the BBC has got to somehow pick itself up, get the right people in place, and get its charter renewed and future funding sorted. And that is probably the biggest task it's had, certainly in the time I can remember.
We both know Tim Davey, the Director General of the BBC, who resigned. I think we're both fond of him as well.
Yes.
Also worth pointing out, he once unsuccessfully stood in a local council election for the Conservative Party, you know, so he's not some sort of lefty here. Did you think he had to go?
No, I don't. I think the Director of News did the honourable thing by resigning. I don't think Tim Davey needed to, but I think he'd probably just had enough. And that's the other thing about public life these days, that it is so sapping and so destructive if you're not careful. And Tim had had a year of bumps and scrapes with a row about Glastonbury and presenters on various programmes. And I think Tim just wanted to have a, you know, proper life back. So I don't think he needed to go. And I think the BBC will suffer, really, because losing a Director of News is bad enough, but having those two vacancies at the same time is really a problem. And you've got to ask who would really want to do the job. That's the big challenge coming up.
Well, I have seen the BBC described this week as the impossible institution. At a time when we are seeing so much polarisation in Britain, the rise of Nigel Farage's Reform UK party, transgender issues becoming such a kind of a fissile issue. I mean, how difficult is it to be a national broadcaster at a time when the nation seems to be tearing itself apart?
Well, you need a national broadcaster precisely for those reasons. And if you take retired voters who favour reform in the coastal communities of Britain and urban greens in the cities and old people, young people, nationalists, unionists, you need somewhere where they all come together. And that's what the BBC still does. And it's worth saying the BBC still has very high trust levels and still very high reach. So probably about 80 to 90% of people in the UK every week come to the BBC. So it's there and it needs to be used, but it's got to make sure that it remains utterly inclusive and allows every single voice to be heard.
Roger, I can't let this interview come to an end without mentioning your own run-in with Donald Trump. 2012, over a BBC documentary about his golf course in Scotland. You got a bit of a serve from Donald Trump on Twitter.
Yes. I mean, what happened was we wanted to broadcast this programme, You've Been Trumped. A couple of days before, we got this humdinger of a legal letter from Trump, and I was shouted out on my mobile phone when I was out at the supermarket on Saturday morning by a Trump lawyer in New York. And we did eventually broadcast the film, but the Trump organisation called for me to be fired, and Trump tweeted, he said, I was a lightweight who didn't have a clue, which I've occasionally used on my Facebook header. But, you get the acclaim. You have Joe Biden reading your book and I have Donald Trump insulting me. But, yeah, that's what happens in life.
It's funny. When I interviewed Donald Trump just before he came down the golden escalator, it was about 9 months before he came and launched his presidential campaign. He loved the BBC. It was almost like he regarded the BBC as an offshoot of the royal family. He could not have been more polite. He was almost polite to the point of obsequiousness. But we've all got our Donald Trump stories. Roger Mosey, it is great to catch up again. Thank you so much for joining us on Saturday.
Bye-bye.
Cheers.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.